It's the California Wine Country Podcast with Steve Jackson and Dan Berger. We taste, we laugh, we learn.
California Wine Country brought to you by Bottle Barn and Della Tofala and Dan Berger, of course, my co-host. And now we've started doing every week, we're doing an oldie but a goodie from Dan's massive cellar. And what'd you bring in today, an 81?
Yeah, 1981 Fox Mountain Cabernet Sauvignon Reserve. It's a brand that very few people know anything about.
Yeah.
But it leads directly to our guest today, Nova Perel, who's the winemaker for Foppiano. And Foppiano was the producer of the Fox Mountain wine that we brought in from 1981.
So. Wow, okay. And you're thinking this is going to be okay?
Should be.
Last week you brought in something from 73, and it, I was thinking, oh, this is going to be horrible.
Turned out to be better than I thought.
It was great.
And then we had Barbara Lindblom in last week, and she had said that her background was with Grand Cru Vineyards, and as I was poking through the cellar today, I found a 1980 Grand Cru Cabernet. So next time we have Barbara back, we'll have a bottle she made.
All right. Our guest today from Foppiano Vineyards is the winemaker Nova Perel. Great to meet you, man. I can't believe you haven't been in before.
You know, it's kind of, I'm surprised.
Mikey?
I'm a big fan of the show, I must say. I love listen to a lot of radio, even though my commute's only about 7 minutes.
I live a mile and a half from here, so
I know that from listening to your show.
So, Nova. I love that name, man.
Thank you. Yes.
I wish I was Nova Jackson.
You don't meet a lot of men named Nova.
I know.
My son is named Nova, so he's 12, and he could be listening right now. So hey, Nova. But several women, handful of women named Nova. It kind of has a feminine ring to it. So
well, actually, I looked at the thing today and I thought, okay, it must be a winemaker, which is cool.
Yeah.
But no, it's a dude.
Yeah. But it served me well. It's a great name, and thanks, Mom.
Yeah, it is a cool name. Okay, so give us your history. How did all this begin for you? And you've been at Foppiano for 5 years?
For coming up on five. So I started there in 15, but right in January of 15. So I inherited some wines that were previously under a different winemaker, but they were very young, so I had some influence over them. And before that, I was assistant winemaker at Dry Creek Vineyards for 7 years.
That's big.
So I learned a lot about how to make Sauvignon Blanc and Zinfandel and Cabernet and under a couple different very well-known winemakers there. And then the start of my career was at a small winery that is very well-known in certain circles, Mount Eden Vineyards in the Santa Cruz Mountains.
Yeah.
So I started my career there, and that was 4 years, and I certainly claim that to be my place where I learned how to make wine, because I jumped way ahead in line to some degree as far as getting an assistant winemaker position. I went to Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo, and my degree is in ecology. So I went there coming from the coast. I grew up in Mendocino. I was going to be a marine biologist was the plan. And once I finished that degree, it didn't seem quite as appealing to jump into whatever that world had to offer. So I joined their crop science program, master's.
We can't take Dan anywhere anymore. I don't know what
I dropped everything. Nothing broke, though.
Nothing broke. The master's program there at Cal Poly, which at the time, the best you could do as far as wine was concerned, was crop science with a concentration in viticulture. So once I finished up that program, I moved up to the Los Gatos area and sent my resume to every winery within commute distance, whether they were looking for somebody or not. And lo and behold, Mount Eden called me up, said, come on up, and basically taught me a great foundation of not only winemaking, but viticulture, too, because it was a small staff, so I was as likely to be on the tractor as doing a radio show, you know. So,
and that's a historic property.
Sure is.
Out there in the middle of, Santa Cruz County, I guess it is.
It'd be Santa Clara County because it looks down over Santa Clara Valley.
Right.
The Appalachian, of course, goes you know, has a view of the ocean, too.
But. I lived in Los Gatos when I worked at KATD Radio in the late 80s, and I remember Eden what?
Yeah, Mount Eden.
Mount Eden, yeah. yes, exactly.
Well, that property drew a lot of the fruit from Santa Clara Valley, and as you know, Santa Clara Valley is mostly homes.
Yes.
You don't see a lot of grape vines out there anymore.
Not anymore. And you're right, it is a historic property because Paul Masson, who started the Mountain Winery, which is now a music venue.
Exactly.
He was played a critical role in California viticulture for a number of reasons. One of them being that he gave rise to a young apprentice named Martin Ray, who started Mount Eden, and later his name was sold to the local winery. So not the same person, but the same person, but not the same group. And he was instrumental in label laws. You know, he was, before, when he was learning to taste wine, everything was white Burgundy or Chablis or, you know, we were adopting the names of the French who had pioneered all their, you know, their techniques in winemaking, and we just basically stole them, but it didn't apply to us as our appellations and microclimates and are much different, and matching the correct varietal up to them is different. So he said, this is just not going to work. We've got to figure out a way to say this is Cabernet Sauvignon from Napa Valley or Sonoma or whatever it might be. And that was big in retrospect.
Dan?
Yeah, and Mount Eden turned out to be quite a historic property after that as well. It had some great winemaking people who went through there. And then when Novo came up to Sonoma County, though, it was really a transitional period. The first wineries in the county were in the early 70s, 72, 73, where it was the beginning of Sonoma County's viticulture and enology programs. But as when you got here in the 90s, I guess, it was the second wave of enthusiasm, and that was really kind of a novel approach. Can you talk a little bit about what was happening? I mean, we were still sort of stuck on like five varietals.
Yeah, and I think we still do have a lot to learn about what the world of wine can offer us as a growing region. But my first vintage was 2004 now, so mm-hmm. I was part of a class, I would say, of winemakers who were somewhere in the middle of the second renaissance, yeah. Maybe as you're describing it. So in the 80s and 90s, we were finding that expertise was valuable, but maybe slightly scarce. And so people became very famous for being winemakers, and they were able to go from property to property as consultants and produce great lineages for themselves and their own wines and their names, and help people get off the ground making wine that people wanted to drink.
Well, tell us a little bit about Foppiano when you got there. What was mm-hmm. What was the impact that was being? Because Bill Regan had been the winemaker for several years, was a good quality winemaker. Mm-hmm. We tasted through a number of those older yes. wines, and they've really held up beautifully.
Yeah, Bill Regan, who I never met, he died before I was able to meet him. Had quite a lineage. I mean, I don't know the exact number, but I think he was at least making wine there for 25 years. And as you mentioned, we were tasting through wines that he made, and I'm sure he would have been and was very proud of. He put the chemistry right on the label and was very, I think he had found his niche, and his career was very satisfying for him working with Petite Sirah. I remember reading that in his obituary, is that he loved making Petite Sirah. So he, being the flagship varietal for the winery, I think he had found the right place. And when he moved on, another winemaker lady, Natalie West, who I've only met briefly, she took a more progressive stance, or maybe progressive is the wrong word, but a more modern stance on winemaking, and driving a little bit more of the premium style of winemaking. They were able to buy some open-top fermenters and nicer presses, and you know, kind of jumping the winery into a more modern feel. And we kind of have just picked up where she had left off. She was there, I think, for 7 years. So
talk a little bit about that Sauvignon Blanc you brought.
The Sauvignon Blanc is a Russian River estate. Pretty much everything we do is estate grown.
It's 18, right?
It's 2018.
It's beautiful.
And
stunning wine. Yeah.
Those in the audience who have traveled 101, which I think is most of you guys, if you are traveling north or south, but say you're going south and you go over the Russian River Bridge there just south of Healdsburg, everyone knows that little nursery right on the road, Vine and Branch, it's called. And the vineyard around that is old vine-looking vineyard. That's actually this Sauvignon Blanc. So next time everyone's driving by, look over. And those, according to me anyways, are likely the, if not one of the oldest Sauvignon Blanc vines in Sonoma County, which I think is pretty remarkable given that Sauvignon Blanc performs well under more modern cropping techniques. Quality seems to show well at higher yields, but we're able to survive, that vineyard's able to survive on lower yields, but the quality, I think, shows through. And there's two blocks there. One is generally very tropical, and the other one is very grassy. So I have the option of finding some place in the middle that tends to appease both palates, because as we probably all would agree, that some people prefer the grassier Sauvignon Blanc, and some people prefer a much more tropical, closer to a Chardonnay in body. And somewhere in the middle is where I like the wine to be, and I think most of the people who taste it agree.
You would agree.
Absolutely. This has the stamp of the varietal, but it doesn't go that far down the road toward New Zealand. But New Zealand's got more of that green grass, sort of cut hay, mowed lawn sort of stuff. This is much more tropical on the nose, but then when you get it in the mouth, you're starting to pick up a little bit of that herbal note, which is so attractive because it's such a beautiful part of this variety. You don't get that from any other grape.
By the way, Fopiano Vineyards was founded in 1896 by Giovanni Fopiano. It's one of Sonoma County's oldest continually operated family-owned wineries.
That's
true. Deep. 1896.
Yeah, that is. It's pretty remarkable. And, I always get in conversation with folks, every winery is assigned a bonded winery number. It's basically where they are in line as far as when they were established.
Mm-hmm.
So bonded winery number one, I'm not sure, but I assume might be Buena Vista.
It's New York State.
In California.
Yeah.
So we're bonded winery 312. So we were the 312th winery in California. So there's a lot of wineries ahead of us, but a lot of them have either gone under or sold.
Sure.
And so there's a nice little handful, but it's a long history of winemaking. It was pretty incredible, if you think about it.
Yeah, no kidding. Giovanni Fopiano.
Well, Louis Fopiano Sr. Was with us till fairly recently. He was, what was he, 90? Was he 100?
I think he was 100. I think he was 101 or 103. Or
so. I can relate. I'm going to be 100 next year.
Okay. Look pretty good, Steve.
Thank you.
You're looking good. Must be the wine.
It is.
Got to be the Chardonnay, though, too. Good Chardonnay.
Well, talk about, I'm sorry, but so we talked about the Sauvignon Blanc, but this Chardonnay, what year is it?
It's a 17, and the reason I brought this, other than knowing that you're a big Chardonnay fan, Steve.
Let me taste that.
It's a 2017 Russian River right off the estate, but it's the last vintage of what we call Block 9. So again, if the folks who are traveling Old Redwood Highway, and you get off at the off-ramp there by the what's now Prickett's Nursery, Old Healdsburg Nursery, and you drive past the winery, and if you look to the right, a little ways down, there was a block there right on the corner, right where Jesse Katz is building his new winery. Jesse Katz is a friend of yours and mine. I've heard him on the show before.
Mm-hmm.
He's building a new winery there that people have probably seen. Right at the corner was an old Chardonnay vineyard, and it made up this block selection. But we decided to pull it out, and Barbera is going in there, which is cool for your Italian varietal lovers out there. And so this wine that I brought today is the last vintage, these are air quotes, quote-unquote last vintage. So we harvested the fruit, fermented it separately, bottled it as kind of a commemoration of the block, and then out it came.
Yeah, so, are there going to be other Chardonnays from Faux Piano?
Yeah, well, there's still other blocks available.
Yeah, okay.
It was very small. It was a small little block right on the corner, and it made some. It was virused, and it was expressing all sorts of great character, but it was just more trouble than it was worth. Unfortunately,
this is a very interesting wine, if not spectacular. What I like about it is that it really emulates a little bit of French Burgundy, but with a real California twist, a little bit of lime and citrus, other citrus notes to it.
I've gotten lime here.
But in the middle palate.
I was trying to figure out what that was, yeah, and then you said it, and now I get it.
The middle palate is this acidity that is carries with it some traces of new oak, but not very much, just enough to enhance the expression of the wine in the finish. So you have this wonderful wine that smells and tastes good all by itself, but the first thing you do is, after you taste it, you want something food with it. So it's good.
Yeah, I like it a lot. It's a 17, you said.
It's a 17, yeah. And it's part of our reserve series. We only made 49 cases of it.
Wow.
And so it's at the tasting room if people want to come in and try it, of course. But, you know, it's... I love that you mentioned that it's Burgundian in nature, because really, from a winemaking standpoint, that's how I learned to make Chardonnay at Mount Eden. Was don't be afraid of barrel fermentation. Don't be afraid of malolactic. Balance is critical. Always keep the acid balance in mind, but and don't overdo it. Don't overdo the oak. Because it's a tried and true technique. In Burgundy.
And overdoing the oak on a Chard.
I know, that's a bad idea.
It's not a good thing.
Jackson. So, but again, balance is everything, and it shows in the wine. It's very drinkable. You know, it doesn't overpower you one way or another. It makes a nice, complete package.
I agree. And are you guys in Bottle Barn? You got to be.
Yeah, we're in Bottle Barn. They're great. They've got to be the best. The best purveyor of wine and other booze in our neighborhood, there's no doubt.
Yeah, they're amazing. It is California Wine Country, brought to you by Bottle Barn and Della Tofola. This week, we're very happy to have the winemaker for Faux Piano Vineyards, Nova Peril, with us. And it is brought to you, as I mentioned, in part by Della Tofola. If you're a winery I'm talking to you people out there who listen to this show religiously, as far as our California Wine Country show and our show with the wine growers, with Carissa, and, of course, Mike Haney from the Vintners, who was in yesterday. So we have so many people listening in this industry. If your winery or brewery is in equipment planning mode for this year, consider Della Tofola. 60 years they've been doing this worldwide. They've been making equipment for the wine, beer, and beverage industries. Everything from crushers to conveyors and pumps to presses, filters, fillers, complete packaging solutions. And if you're in the wine industry, their technologies allow you to get your grapes from vineyard to bottle easily. Now, they are worldwide, and it's been 60 years, but they're based in Santa Rosa, and they have high-quality equipment, experienced technicians, and they're there for all your service needs. And Nova Peril has dealt with Della Tofola before as a winemaker. Mm-hmm. They do some great stuff.
Yeah, we... You mentioned that they've been around for so long. I think that they were one of the pioneers of the stainless steel concept. I mean, it's a metal that's now really the only way to hold wine. I mean, there's other barrels and concrete and things of that nature. But mm-hmm. being able to sanitize and keep clean, they understood that before a lot of people. So they certainly have a cornerstone in modern winemaking and other stuff.
And worldwide.
And worldwide.
Must be pointed out, yeah, even though they're based here in Santa Rosa. If you're in the industry, be it winery, brewery, any kind of beverage industry, it's DellaTofola.us. DellaTofola.us. All right. Nova Peril is here, the winemaker for Faux Piano, and Dan Berger, of course. And Dan, we're doing this every week. Dan's bringing an oldie but a goodie from his ginormous wine cellar.
You might
say that. This is from 1981. Now, again, explain this, and then we'll talk about it.
Well, 1981 was the first year that Faux Piano decided they were going to do a Fox Mountain designation. It was the first year that they decided to use that as a premium label.
Now, where's Fox Mountain?
It's actually a location right on the property. It's a little hill, I guess.
Okay.
It's right there on the estate. And they decided to use Fox Mountain as an appellation, or it's not as an appellation, but as a feature for this particular wine. It's a name for this brand. It was short-lived, I guess. It's not was not used very often. This particular wine, the 81, was harvested from their property, and I think part of the reason that the winemakers got so excited was the acidity was so good. This wine is only 12.5 alcohol. It was aged in some American oak, very brief amount of time. It's really a throwback to the 1950s and 60s in California winemaking history, and this is really a delicious wine. It doesn't have a lot of expression of oak character, because it wasn't the oak that didn't drive it. What's driving this wine is the varietal, but there's also other stuff in here, including Merlot and Cab Franc and some other stuff. I think it's delicious.
I don't like it.
Well, and this is the crapshoot you get into.
One of the reasons I love you bringing in these wines from your cellar.
Well, I think this is going to be great for our dinner this evening. We're going to go over to Seatide Bistro and try to figure out what to put with it, but in any case, the flavors of this wine are really authentic to Cabernet, you know, and that's to me, this is not the Cabernet of today's market. It's the Cabernets of the 1960s.
Is this going to turn brown as we watch it in the glass?
No, not as we watch it. It'll be okay for about an hour and a half, but, you know, watch it in 2 hours. It'll be moving.
1981.
And 12.5% alcohol, that's
low.
Low, and that's great to be able to pull it off.
Yeah.
And in I was just thinking just now, and Paul Faux Piano is our vineyard manager and one of the family, obviously, and he'd have to text me and let me know for sure. But this 81, these vines are likely still there.
Wow.
Yeah. That's the block that is right on Old Redwood Highway as you pass the winery. They were originally head-trained, and now they're on a single-wire trellis. So take a peek next time you're going by. And one great thing about it is that for the first time in over 10 years, we're going to do a Cabernet off the estate for 2017. So
I hope there's more than 49 cases, because I love the flavors of this wine.
Yeah. I don't like this wine at all. Will you dump that in the dump cup?
You could just dump it right in here, and I'll drink it.
Oh, you can drink it.
Are you kidding me? That's good stuff.
All right.
Okay, you got it.
Yeah.
No, that's
don't
too
want
much
that history to go to waste.
81.
Mm-hmm. 81.
What else is going on at Faux Piano Vineyards, Nova?
Well, I did bring a couple other wines. Being right at the northern tip of Russian River Valley, you know, we have so many options for growing. If you can visualize the property, we butt right up against Dry Creek Valley as an appellation to the west, and then Alexander Valley to the northeast. And so we've got the right next to the river there is perfect for Pinot Noir, and as you move away from the river, it gets warmer and warmer, and it allows us to do Zinfandel and Petit Syrah and Carignan, and a little bit more in the Cabernet, of course, a little bit warmer weather type stuff. And the other wines that I brought, because we are Russian River, we do a couple versions of Pinot Noir. We do an estate line and a reserve. I brought the reserve. We call it our river's edge as a block. It's a long, skinny block right on the river there, lower below the property.
You get some nice cooling nights there because of that river access.
Yeah, you can imagine the fog that rolls in. It usually clings to that riverbed, and so you can stand at the winery where it's clear and look down and see that mist still hanging in the trees down by the river. And
nice.
Just ideal for growing Pinot Noir.
That's a beautiful look, too.
Yeah. No, it's very, very photogenic.
And again, this is a pretty wine.
Yeah, so this is our 2016 River's Edge.
Pinot?
Pinot Noir.
Okay.
And you want to give it a shot?
Yeah, let me give it a taste here.
I think you like it. It's really nice and it's elegant, and that's the whole thing.
Yeah,
this is not one of those blockbuster styles.
Again, it gets back to balance. I mean, same thing that we were talking about in the Chardonnay. A wine has to be multifaceted, but in a balanced frame. It can't be too much cherry cola. It can't be too much oak.
Oh, I like this.
You know? Do you?
Yeah.
Hey, there you go.
Chard and Pinots are my favorites, right? Okay, but this, and I don't like Pinots hitting me in the face, and this, and most of them don't, but this, the color's gorgeous when I tip my glass. Yeah,
really pretty light color.
Yeah, and just kind of.
I'm the kind of guy that. I should say I'm the kind of winemaker that believes in just kind of like the vineyard's got to speak. If you have a vineyard that is special in one way or another, whether it makes exceptional fruit that everyone can agree on, or it's an old vineyard that was planted by so-and-so and that's dear to you, whatever the reason, I think there's some obligation to allow it to express itself. And that's the whole concept of terroir, really, in my mind anyways.
And Dan, tell me more about this Pinot.
This wine could easily have been aged in some fresh, new French oak and given it a smokier, more bacony component. But as it isn't, it doesn't have the weight to sustain that. So Nova realized that he had something that he could play with, but it was not as much weight as the wine could sustain with new oak. So he put it into some barrels to give it just that hint of barrel contact. And here you have a wine that it's not long lived. This is not going to go 20 years, but boy, in about five or six or seven, this is going to be singing.
Great
stuff.
And thank you. The texture in the finish, it's got texture, which means that there's a little, what you might call a little bit of a tannic finish, only ever so slightly. But the really interesting thing tasting this wine is that just this week I pulled out, because we're getting this library tasting concept off the ground. We have a lot of wines in our library, and we want to bring them out and show them to the public. And it's my job to go through there and figure out what's drinkable and what's not. And I found a nice little flight of Estate Pinot Noir, starting with 08. So we're talking 08, 9, 10, 11, and 12. And they all shared this same character.
Really?
08 was fantastic. 09, great. All great, showing their own characteristics. But that dusty tannin in the finish. And that was winemaking that was going on way before I was there. So I just love the idea that the vineyard is consistently expressing the same level of elegance and character. I mean, again, that's the kind of the whole point of a place, right? And it was great because, you know, I pull out the wines and I'll taste. I just need a glass to taste it. And I walked across, because the winery is across the street from the tasting room, so I walked across the driveway and set the bottles in the tasting room before they opened up. And lo and behold, by the end of the day, we had sold three or four cases of library Pinot because they were just showing great. And people, and we were, you know, here's a treat.
And this wine sells for what, $30 or something like that?
It's something like that. I think it's like, the black label now is up to $45, I think. But pretty good, pretty fair deal given the world.
It is
Pinot
amazing
Noir,
project,
right?
To see
because
wines.
This Pinot is amazing.
Well, yeah, I mean, we see Pinot Noirs at $75-$80, and nobody blinks. But this is a bargain.
Yeah. Nova, talk about the tasting room at Foppiano and where for people who have never been there, and how to make that happen.
It's right off Old Redwood Highway, and again, the audience is probably driven by the winery. You know, 100 times, and whether they noticed it or not has been there for so long, it's a bit out of sight, out of mind. But we have some new mural out front to commemorate the historic storefront that it used to have. It says El Foppiano Wine Company, which was the original block letters.
Very cool.
Yeah, and established 1896. And turn in there, and the tasting room is the original home where the family raised and had their children. So it's a historic building. It's got some historic trees all around it, an avocado tree that is countywide famous. We get people showing up from all over the place during the avocado harvest, and there's thousands and thousands of them, and they litter the ground, and it's like nothing you'd believe. So, but among that, there's other trees and other pieces of history, and a 100-year-old barn, and we're open 7 days a week, and it's a very a bit of a gem, a diamond in the rough, undiscovered, because it's not particularly busy. We don't do a whole lot of advertising. We let people to come in and enjoy themselves, and between the picnic area and the wines, you should be all set.
It's fopiano.com, and again, it's spelled Fopiano. Faux piano.
At the old timers luncheon that was held just for industry members about 4 months ago.
Why wasn't I invited? I'm older than most of you.
That's true. You should get an invitation. We'll get you an invitation.
Okay. Right.
So I opened up a 1958 Fopiano Burgundy.
Oh, get out.
And it was still in good shape.
No kidding.
And we have one more.
You going to bring that in at some point?
I think we're going to pour it for Louis and Helene, and let the two of them enjoy the fruits of the dad's labors.
Well, we have the 125th anniversary is coming up, so
I'll bring it along.
We have that to look forward to, and we've actually done my first endeavor into sparkling winemaking. We've got a Blanc de Noir and a Blanc de Blanc and,
really?
and a sparkling red Pinot that. very small production. We did it for 1 year, basically to commemorate that anniversary. And Rob McNeil, our GM, who was the lead at Mum Napa, has pretty deep roots in sparkling winemaking, and he allowed me to make the wine with his guidance. And we have a treat. I've tasted. It was my first shot, and I'm not going to take more than my fair share of credit, but. It's just outstanding wine.
Sparkling red is really hard to make.
It's
really hard to make.
It's shockingly good.
Have we ever even tasted it in here?
Not in here.
No, I don't think so.
I have none in my cellar. Not a bottle.
Let's make a date.
Well, you know, Corbel down the road.
They make a little rouge.
They do a little bit, but this is a red Pinot Noir that was harvested traditionally just slightly. Earlier than you would a normal wine, and
became a sparkling wine.
And we carbonated in a method champenois, and it's just mind-blowingly good.
Wow!
And even Paul Fopiano, who doesn't show a lot of emotion, was like, "Wow, this is shockingly good."
Well, you need to come back.
Coming from him, you need to come back and
bring that, because I got to both Dan and I.
I've tasted maybe five decent red sparklings in my life, so that's.
and you know what we did a cold duck. You remember the cold duck days?
Oh, good Lord!
Fopiano, and you do. My mom's from Detroit too, by the way.
Oh, cool!
And
hi, Mom.
She told me about the cold duck. We have a bottle in our display case in the tasting room, and so we're basically reinventing the modern cold duck, but of course in an ultra premium type of way.
Whack, whack, whack. We used to go in Detroit. We'd go whack, whack, whack. Well, we can afford a cold duck.
Yeah.
Sucks, man.
Yeah, we won't leave. It as such, but that was kind of, believe it or not, that was kind of the there was some motivation there to recreate that, because it's, you know, when you're around that long, a winery's around that long, they try to experiment. And,
yes, that was the red.
That was the foundation for the idea, but it's going to be better than your average.
Yes, well, I would assume that, and I know if you're you guys are involved with it, it's not going to be like the cold duck that we used to whack whack when we were in high school. Dan?
I drank the best sparkling red wine I ever drank in 1992. I was in Australia, and there was a winery called, let's see, the name of the wine is Basket Press Shiraz. And it's forget the name of the producer, tiny producer. They make about 100 cases a year, and it sells out the moment of release. And there's a waiting list for people, and they spend a ton of money. I don't know how much it is, like $80 or $90 a bottle.
Really? And they're sold out.
Sold out in about 1 minute. Yeah, it's just, and it's called Basket Press, and I'll say it's an Australian wine from the Barossa.
Wow.
Well, even if we sell out in the first 30 seconds, we'll make sure we save a bottle for the show.
There you go.
Thank you. And I, again, as I said earlier, I'm amazed you haven't been in before after 11 years of California wine country and et cetera. But Nova Peril, the winemaker at Fopiano Vineyards, Fopiano.com. Great stuff, dude.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to be here, of course. Like I said, I'm a big fan, so.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Quick introduction to the next step in this process where we're going to start to bring old wine from the cellar. So what is old? So the 81 is old, all right? We give you the fact that the 81 Cabernet I brought today was old. But it was not as old as I expected it was going to be. I thought, you want some, what do you want?
No, no, I'm fine.
All right. So
I did not like this wine.
All right, well,
from 1981.
All right, but two things. Number one, some wines will not be likable by some people, but they might be by others. And secondly, some wines age better when you don't anticipate what's going to be there. If you anticipated, for example, that the 73 Simi Burgundy we brought last week was going to be dead as a doornail, you were much more forgiving when you tasted it.
Okay, from now on, don't tell me, don't show me the bottle.
There you go.
1981, and I could taste this blind without knowing that it's from
you still won't like it, but it'll be for different reasons.
Probably not, but okay. But that's cool. So every week you're bringing one of your cellar bottles.
And it could be different. It could be 20 years old. It could be 10 years old. It could be a 5-year-old Chardonnay that didn't make it.
All right. Well, let's try that, too.
Okay.
Every week, though, you're bringing one of these oldies but goodies in. And yeah. It's California Wine Country brought to you by Bottle Barn and Della Tufla, Dan Berger, of course. And a pleasure to have our guest, the winemaker at Fopiano Vineyards, Nova Peril, man. Great to see you. And again, I can't believe you haven't been in before after 11 years of doing this kind of stuff, mm-hmm. but we need you to come back.
But. And the reason to bring Nova back would be, here he is, sitting here in the new studio, and he didn't bring one of the starlight wines of the Fopiano brand, and that is Petit Sirah. He didn't bring any.
Dude.
Whoa.
It is our flagship. I do actually have a bottle. But do we have the time is the question.
1 minute.
Yeah, I just got 1 minute.
Let's do a quick splash.
All right, this is a Petit Sirah.
This is a Petit Sirah, of course.
The right color.
The flagship of the winery. They've hung their hat on Petit Sirah for generations, literally. And this wine is, again, one of our reserves. It's named after Gianna Fopiano, the oldest of the sixth generation.
This is wonderful wine.
You know, I've always liked Petit Sirah. We don't get a lot of it coming through here on Wednesdays, but okay, Dan, talk about this.
Rich, dense, chocolatey. Mm-hmm. It's got some berries. It's got some spice components. It's got some oak contact, which gives it a little bit more expansiveness. Delicious wine. Serve it with a very heavy beef stew, and you'll love the stew. Now you'll love the wine.
Yeah. No, this is really good. What year is this?
This is a 2000. Yep. No, that's the Pinot. 2015. And
wow,
And as Dan can attest, the Petit Sirah from the Library Wines show surprisingly extraordinarily well.
They last forever.
They literally last forever.
I love this Petit Sirah, and I like Petit Sirah. And Dan, I was going to mention something to you a month or so ago. You know, we never get Petit Sirahs in here.
Well, we did tonight.
We did tonight.
But I've got some in the cellar.
All right, bring it. Mm-hmm. That's it for us. Thanks, Nova. Thanks, Dan Berger.